Hello and welcome to episode 515 of Fergo on the Free. I'm that bloke from Rugby League Project, Andrew Ferguson. You can find me on Twitter at AndrewRLP. And joining me as always is the glorious League Freak. You can also find on Twitter at League Freak. How you going there, mate?
I'm going very well, Andrew. How are you?
I'm just diving straight in here. Mm-hmm. I find out that if something's not going good in your life, it's fucking Benji Marshall's fault.
Oh, I reckon. Well, the problem with Benji, okay, and I know this because I determined it before the game. I just don't think he takes coaching seriously.
He doesn't.
And I just base that on nothing.
Well, it's based on all of the evidence of all of the games he's coached in his career up to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't take it. I mean, if he cared, if he actually took the game seriously, he'd have been a coach before now.
And the thing is, too, like, you want evidence to make assumptions on how seriously somebody, you know, takes their job. And the fact that Benji Marshall actually goes home at a certain point tells me that the guy doesn't really want to be a coach. He should sleep at the training facility. And as soon as he decides to go home, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, Benji. Are you out? You know?
Should he even be sleeping?
I don't think so.
Nah. And he needs to be bald. I mean, if you're going to be a good coach, you can't have hair.
Look at Des Hasler. Full head of hair, can't coach.
That's right. You got to lose the hair.
Yeah.
I think the other problem we've got too with Benji is, to be honest, he's a good looking human. Can't have that either.
Nah, it's
who was the last coach that was also a model?
When you're a coach, you need to look like your face has fallen off your skull,
or it's in the process of.
Yeah.
Like when you look at Feel Good, his is still dropping down.
Yeah, it's still happening somehow.
Yeah. Nah, it's pretty crazy, and I've come starting on this because of the back page on the Sunday Telegraph.
Okay.
It is riddled with great content.
Okay. Well, so much great football to talk about. I mean, into the football side of things. It's good. This is great. No.
So the back page has got the scoreline 262-62 and Benji's face on there.
Okay.
And then on one article it says here, the proof one man can't fix this club overnight, no matter how hard Benji works.
Well, yeah,
so that's trolling the people who had a go at the dipshit article that was written about how Benji can't be working hard enough because he's not staying there and being a psychopath about being a coach.
Yeah, it's almost as though that to have a good football club, you need to almost have like 17 really good players and a CEO and all sorts of other people, not just one coach. But this blows my mind because I didn't know that until this very moment.
Yeah.
I thought you just needed one dude. I was like, you just get one dude and that's it. It's all over.
That's it. That's all you need. Just get one human.
Mm.
I mean, Phil Gould's proven that. Oh, hang on. Let me. Trey Rotten. Dez. That's a bit touchy. Should I go to the next one?
Yeah, go to the next one.
Okay. Instead of having West Tigers written on there.
Yeah.
Get this, okay. They've called them the... Are you ready? Are you sitting down? Because this is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Worst Tigers.
That must have taken a long time for them to come up with that one.
I'd like to know, like, minutes and seconds, how long it took them to figure that one out.
This is why they're so terrified of AI, because AI's been around for 3 months. And it's more creative than these fucking dickheads that work at the bloody newspapers these days.
This is true. Now, what they've done, okay. So we've got the story, okay. The proof that one man can't fix this club overnight, no matter how hard Benji works. The scoreline, 262-62.
Mm-hmm.
That scoreline is the combined scoreline of all five grades for the West Tigers on Saturday, was it Sunday? So NRL, they lost 32-12. Jersey Flag, they lost 36-0. New South Wales Cup lost 50-12. SG Ball Cup, The Rabbitohs beat the Magpies 42-6. The Bulldogs beat the Tigers 42-6. Harold Matthews, the Magpies beat the Rabbitohs 26-14, and the Bulldogs beat the Tigers 46-0. Apparently, and I'm not sure you're aware of this,
mm-hmm.
not only is Benji Marshall the CEO,
yeah.
he's also coaching 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He's coaching 7 teams within the club all at the same time.
You know how I know he's not really taking this coaching seriously? Because he doesn't coach 8 of the teams.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost as though the West Tigers were really poorly run for a very long time, and that this is the result that happens when you get to the end of that process.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and I mean, let's cut to the chase, okay? This is not an indictment on where the West Tigers are at. What this is, what this is clearly, okay, for everyone who's probably not aware, and I did mention this last week, this is a bunch of journos who've got the shits because the people who would leak information to them from the club all the time, give them story after story to write about so they wouldn't shit on the club as much. They're not getting those leaks anymore. So now they just shit on the club hard the whole time. Do you know how many people genuinely give a fuck about West Tigers stories? No one. Okay? No one wants to read about the worst team in the competition. I'm a West Tigers fan. I don't want to read about my club. I want to watch them play football. I want to see them improve. That's it. I don't need to hear anything about what they're doing or how they're performing. As long as everything's above board, I don't give a shit. But because these guys rely so heavily on leaks because they don't know how to be journalists and they're not getting it from this club, what this is pissy, bitchy moaning. That's all it is. You're not giving anything on leaks anymore, so we're going to shit on your club. You know what? Fucking bring it.
Yeah, yeah. And look, this is... It's great for independent content creators because people are just leaving the corporate media behind in droves and they're going to independent content creators for their news and their analysis and things like that. So every time I see this sort of stuff put out by the corporate media, I just think it's fantastic because they're just driving away the, you know, the few people that actually pay attention to them anymore. Because you know, they set the way that they set up their business model, it turned a corner and it took them down this road that is just going to lead to nothing, you know, and it's great. I love seeing it. I hope they continue it.
Absolutely. Now, there's two more stories on here.
Okay.
One more does involve a bloke wearing a West Tiger shirt
because
it's Michael Maguire.
Okay.
And there's a comment there says, "I won't make same blue," in quotation marks. And they put it in blue text, just so you know.
Yeah.
Just in case you don't know, he's the coach of New South Wales this year, and they wear blue. I mean, that's genius.
Yeah.
Sorry, AI. You're just not up to scratch. Now, the last one, which is out of all of this garbage, right? This last one, up in the top left corner of the back page, is the one that was the most sickening. It's got a picture of Jack Bird, and underneath it says, "Flano saved my career."
Really?
Yes.
That's kind of weird. Like,
not only did they lobby so hard for so many years to get Shane Flanagan a job as a coach again, now that he's got one, the PR machine has not stopped.
Yeah, that's strange. I mean, like, I think Jack Bird is a prototypical Huddersfield giant, quite honestly. You know, he just has that level of skill and commitment to the game. I think he's just a pure Huddersfield giant right now playing in the NRL. But at no point did he really have a problem getting in this St. George Illawarra Dragons team because they suck. And so, like, it's not like he had to worry about his place. They actually featured him as a very important part of their lineup, and that's why they suck. So I don't know how Flanagan saved his career. That's a bit of a weird one. I wonder if he feels the same way when he is playing for Huddersfield.
Oh, if it hadn't been for Flano, he wouldn't have got that gig playing for Huddersfield.
So weird.
Yeah, very, very crazy. Now, Now that we've got the garbage out of the way.
Yeah.
Let's get into the footy. Now, you did mention before independent content creators.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of my favourite independent content creators.
Oh, thank you, Andrew.
I was going to say, aside from us, because obviously we're at the top of the tree.
Yeah.
Is a website called rugbyleagueitest.com.
Mm-hmm.
Please go check them out. They do a lot of analysis. So the one thing they're looking at so far this year is about whether NRL teams are playing wider. And they're looking at the data on that. So they're playing wider of the ruck, less in the middle, more down the edges of the ruck.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go and reveal what they've got in there. But if you want to get some genuine analysis, it is free. Go over and read it. It is absolutely brilliant gear. I am going to see if I can get some, try and get some content from those guys that we can put on the podcast, because I haven't approached them about doing it on there. So I don't want to take anything away from them, because they do take donations and stuff. But I do want to push some people to go over there and check out what they're doing, because that's where you should be putting your interest and putting your focus on that sort of data, because they've got some brilliant stuff on there. They've been doing it for years.
Yeah.
They've got heat maps on, you know, where teams are on the field, stuff like that. Unbelievable stuff. So please go check them out. But the reason why I brought it up about the playing wider is I saw a few games on the weekend, and I swear on nearly every single one of them, as the game got further and further into the second half, the second rowers were outside the Ellis corridor. Like, what the hell is he doing out there? I think I saw one game where, which one was it now? I can't remember. Might have been the Bulldogs versus Sharks game.
Mm-hmm.
And kickout looked like he was very close to the wing. I saw in the Parramatta Penrith game, Mitch Kenny playing out nearly on the wing when a break was made. Don't know where the winger was, but Mitch Kenny's out there. What's he doing there? And he wasn't a dummy half. He was genuinely on the wing waiting for a pass, and he called for it. He made a break and gone, oh, shit, that's right, I'm not a winger. Where's the support?
Yeah. Well, I tell you, one of the things I've noticed already this season is that I think that teams have finally had a really good look at the way Penrith play defence and the way they gang tackle. And I think that we're seeing a lot more teams adopt what Penrith are doing with their gang tackling. Now, the next level of that Penrith does is their one-on-one tackling. If you focus on their one-on-one tackling, it is absolutely outrageously good. Mm-hmm. Like, they normally, when somebody will isolate a Panthers player one-on-one, they normally get stopped dead. And it's one of the features of the Panthers game. They kind of do everything at that super high level. And that's why they're one of the greatest defensive teams we've ever seen. But I think that, like, you look at the teams like the Sharks, definitely have changed the way that they play defensively. And you see a lot more teams trying to get into that same sort of gang tackling style that the Panthers have. And there are things that you've then got to compensate for, like it. All of a sudden, it compresses your defense normally in the middle of the field. And I think that what you're seeing is teams going wide, trying to take advantage of the compressed defense in the middle of the field from all the gang tackling that's happening. Now, the amazing thing about the Panthers is that they manage to do that gang tackling, and the work they do off the ball and away from the ball in defense, it means that they've still got their line set when they're out wide, and their cover defense is still good, and their one-on-one tackling is still good. So they're doing all these different things, but I think that not every team that is trying to adopt that defensive style is quite doing all those things that the Panthers are doing. So I think that that's what we're seeing. I think we're seeing teams trying to take advantage on the outside. And some are doing it well, others are doing it not so well. But it's interesting seeing. It's making for some really exciting football. Like, we're seeing the ball move all over the place this year from most teams. And, like, it's given us some incredible games already this year.
Oh, it has. There is still an element of you need to make the You need to make the ground in the middle first if you're going to make the ball, you know, if you're going to make the ball sing for you out wide. Mm-hmm. And while they are playing really wide and there's a lot of great stuff going on out there, I do think some teams, more than others, need to set the platform in the middle first.
Yep, so for 100%.
Me, the Sharks and Parramatta are two of those teams that have to set that tone in the middle first. Otherwise, for whatever reason, it doesn't work for them out wide.
Yeah.
They just seem to keep going side to side and not really progressing forward much or putting much pressure on. And we saw it for the second half of Parramatta against Penrith and in the first half for the Sharks against the Bulldogs. So a lot of sideways movement. Not exactly punching through the middle as much.
Mm-hmm.
Parramatta looked unbelievable in that first half against the Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to the line, playing hard. You know, the other thing that was crazy about it is they very rarely had Mitch Moses doing anything throughout the whole game, but even less so in the first half. Dylan Brown was fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And playing short balls close to the line, running up to the line, getting the defenders to draw two in every time. Doesn't matter who you're playing against. One bloke draws in two. It's simple mash. You've got an opportunity somewhere. And you need the support runners to be there with you. That was another thing that the Sharks were missing against the Bulldogs. They could have racked up quite a bigger score. Every time they made a half chance through a line break, no one was trailing following through. So it's just a bloke made a break and then he got tackled. And then, we made 15 metres there or 20 metres. Woohoo. You know, could have been better.
Yeah.
But as I said in the season preview we did, I generally think that the Sharks are going to be more focused on defence this year. And at the moment, they're the best defensive team in the comp. So I think it's kind of testament to what they're aiming to do. The one thing that's surprising me is how poor the Rabbits are at the moment.
Yeah, they're a little bit, like we talked about in the last episode, they don't seem to have a focus on what they want to be as a team. I don't know if Jack Whiten's going to change that when he comes in because, like, they're going to play him in the centres. But apparently they've dropped Ilias for the game coming up. And it's funny because when I was watching them last week and I was thinking about Ilias and how he wasn't taking control of the side. But when you look at how he came into first grade, and we talked about how him and Cody Walker like were strangers for a lot of games. They didn't pass the ball to one another.
Mm.
And I think it's continued from there. I don't think they've really given Ilias the keys to running this team. And I don't care how young your halfback is. Your halfback has to be the person that drives the team around the park. That's their job. And so I think that Ilias getting dropped is like the absolute complete opposite of what I would have done. I would have said, like, we've got to change this. Ilias, you're the leader of the team. Don't worry about the captaincy and all that. Just this is your team. I need you guiding us around the park. And then go to Cody Walker and say, Cody, you're a great player. What you're doing is I'm not even criticizing it. Ilias does, you know, and that's the only way they're going to be successful. And they're not doing that. They're playing a really scatterbrained sort of attack, and it's killing them because they're having to defend, you know, and they're not a great defensive team. And I just think that this is going to be one of those seasons for the Rabbitohs where, you know, I could see them signing a new coach for next year with like five rounds to go or something.
Look, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you're 100% spot on there. The thing that gets me about South is their two best creative ball running players, Cody Walker and Damien Cook, undoubtedly. When you got the pace of Damien Cook at dummy half, man, that's insane. And Walker has this amazing ability. You know, sometimes you see great players have all the time in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The closer Walker gets to the defensive line, the more time he looks like he has.
Yeah.
But when he's further away from it, he looks panicked.
Yep, yep.
It's really crazy. The thing that's amazing at the moment is have a look at the stats for just the game against the Broncos. Cody Walker, 7 runs for 60 metres. he's barely running the ball. And then it gets worse because Damien Cook only had 2 runs for 27 metres. You have all that pace at dummy half and you don't even look at using it.
Yeah, I think that Damien Cook, over the last couple of years, he's running from dummy half has slowed a lot.
And it has, but he's still very sharp there, especially off the mark.
And, it should have been, especially against the Broncos pack, like it should have been one of their features, like get them going backwards and then run out of dummy half, you know. And I'm surprised that more teams don't go back to sort of the dummy half setup that teams had. Like, and I think of Parramatta in the early noughties, where you had PJ Marsh off the bench behind Brad Drew, and you just are always running dummy half runs. You know, and things like that. I think eventually we'll see teams trying that to try and, engage as many defenders as they can in this gang tackling style that most teams are starting to adopt. But, you know, for Souths, that should already be something they do because we've seen Cook can play 80 minutes and give you that dummy half running. So for him to not be running, it's like, then what's he giving you? Like, he's giving you good service out of dummy half, obviously, but... You know, it's not like he's a bone-crushing defender.
Well, this is the thing, okay. He gives you great service, but the forwards. So, Tevita Totola made 118 metres.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kepi with 51. Kalama Tangi, 88. Talis Duncan, 63. Cameron Murray, 78. Havili off the bench, 52. Moali, 95. Shaq Mitchell on the bench, 80. Thomas Burgess, 87. Tani Milne, 158 metres. Their forwards are not making the meters.
Yeah.
Neither are their edge forwards. So if is he just there tackling? Is that his job? And if that's the case, just go and get Cameron McInnes.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, what's the point? You've got one of the most electrifying ball running creative hookers in the game, and you're going, just go out there and tackle, mate.
Well, I think it comes from like because their attack is so poor, they're going side to side. And so, you know, they're not getting the meters and it's killing them defensively. They're having to get through so much work. So, it's almost as though they've got to start their season all over again, which is a scary point to already be at in round, like we're coming up to round 3 now.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be one of them seasons for South. They feel like a team that either needs to start a rebuild or they need an identity. Like when you think of what South's identity is at the moment, it's almost like just hanging there and hope Latrell Mitchell and Cody Walker does something crazy. And that's not good enough.
No. And we've always seen the Bunnies are always at their absolute best when they are running straight.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing side-to-side stuff. They just run straight because they have some of the best line-running players anywhere on the field in the competition. If they're running straight, then Walker has a field day because he'll take the line and he's just got ball-running options all around him. He's just got to drop a short ball or a long ball. It doesn't matter. But at the moment, he's not running the ball. He's just dishing it out to someone outside him. Cook's just throwing it off the ground. There's no creativity coming out of their two experienced playmakers. And then you've got Latrell is basically most of the work he's doing in attack is on his own. He's not being fed great opportunities. Yeah. He's having to try and invent them from nothing somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's having to get, you know, because he's such a big dude that can power through the line or run, you know, run around plays. He's having to, you know, go out wide, take on the line and hope that his presence is what breaks the line open, you know, or he gets too many defenders on him and he gets passed away. And it's, I don't know, I just think that it's been, you know, I think it's poor coaching. I really do. But then when you have this team and you think, well, they went out of their way to spend so much money on Whiten, who's a center, and like, what they really needed forwards. Like, what are you doing? This isn't the Bulldogs, okay? You need to build a rugby league team.
Hey, maybe they can move into the second row.
Well, could he? I mean, look, if I was an opposition team and Whiten decides to play, or they decide to play Whiten in the second row, like, I'm like, fantastic, boys. know, for a good night. And I'm not bagging Whiten for it. It's just like, man, a back trying to play in the centres all of a sudden like that, in the forwards like that. It's like, or in a forward pack that's already struggling, as you pointed out.
But if we're seeing that the forwards are playing wider,
yeah,
what's the difference now? You know, what's the difference between a second row and a centre?
Well, we're starting to get back towards
the early 2000s garbage,
where you need to have a huge centre, or you need someone that's at least like plays like you think of Tungor at the Panthers, right? He's not a giant dude, but he fucking smashes everyone that comes out there. You know what I mean? That's like as low as you can go as a center is having a dude that isn't built like a second row, but smashes everyone like one.
Yeah.
And I don't mind it, but because what we're seeing right now, I mean, we've got some really good attacking centers in the NRL who are doing some crazy shit, but. You know, I do. I think that we're seeing teams kind of go wider because the defense in the middle is so good at the moment.
That is true. Well, what else did we see? Yeah, the Sharks. I watched that one.
What did you think of the Panthers' performance? Because there was a little bit of pressure on them because you don't want to start the season 0-2. They were playing against Parramatta, and Parramatta are the best team in the world at this point of the year. That'd be really good in the World Club Challenge, actually, when I think about it. But they handled Parramatta pretty comfortably, although I will say I think that there's improvement in Parramatta and the Panthers. I don't think we saw either of them at their best. And the one thing that came out of me from that game is that if Parramatta had a really, really good fullback like Joseph Manu, they'd be terrifying. But they've got Clint Gutherson instead, so they're not so terrifying.
I think when Parramatta I'm talking in the first say 25 minutes of the game,
mm-hmm.
when they got within that 20 meter range from the Panthers line, they were playing a lot smarter than they usually do against most other teams.
Yeah,
and they had the Panthers measure in that 25 minute period.
Mm-hmm.
The try that Lussick scored was ridiculously soft for a game against Penrith.
Very, very soft. That was shocking.
That was atrocious defense by Penrith. Lane's try was very good from him, but still I was wondering where the usually strong Panthers defense was. There seemed to be a lot more one-on-one defense going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall in the lead-up to that there being any concerted effort to try and draw defenders to one side. From memory, they were close to the middle of the field, so they should have numbered up pretty well on that one. I don't know what went wrong for Lane to get through.
Yeah, something happened. I don't whether it was a communication issue in defense or something, he just went straight through. It was kind of
too easy.
A problem there, yeah.
Too easy. And I'm not taking anything from Lane because he did have to do a bit of work to get that try. But yeah, usually you're so used to seeing the Panthers defense just make someone just turns up with that last ditch effort to deny someone,
mm-hmm.
And that just didn't happen there. I mean, Sean Lane almost scored another try in the second half too, which wasn't too much different. But Penrith had learnt their mistake by then. The try by Leota, fuck me, I love that.
That was like Taumalolo like, but I think he's one of those dudes that. You know, you think about forwards being the slower guys on the field. I have a feeling that Leota is one of those guys that if you thought to yourself, oh, yeah, I could probably take him in a 100-meter sprint and he would just leave you in his dust.
He's got sleeper speed.
Yeah, yeah, he's a sleeper. It was crazy. And it was not only the speed but the footwork to do it.
Yeah, so it was the footwork, the defend, and then the speed at the end there. Oh, it was a fucking great try, man. That was brilliant.
He is so underrated. It is outrageous. Like, this guy is just, he's built like a brick shit house. He's super mobile. And there's a reason why when him and James Fisher-Harris leave the field, you can put some points on Penrith. When they come back, it's over in a lot of games. And it was interesting this game against Parramatta because it felt close and it was back and forward a little bit. And then Penrith just come out in the second half and it was a completely different game.
Yeah, and they moved into third gear.
Yeah, and they probably could have put on another 12 points or so. They had a couple of things that just didn't work out. They had a couple of breaks down the sidelines that, you know, a pass here or there just wasn't great. But it was, I think it was probably a good thing for the Eels to lose a game like that against Penrith, because the Eels try and measure themselves up against the Panthers, as most teams do. Like, it's not just the Eels thing, but the Eels in particular, because in the past they felt like coming out of regular seasons, they've had the measure on Penrith, and then we get to the finals and they can't win a game against them. So they measure themselves against Penrith because of that. And so I think that a loss like that is probably a good thing for the Eels, so that they're changing their focus of like, oh yeah, we've got their number, we just have to get it working, you know, we just have to be everyone to be injury free in the finals and we'll get them. No, it's a lot bigger of a hill they need to climb. And I think that a loss like that for the Eels is probably a good thing, because it gives them that focus that they have so much work to do.
Absolutely. And look, Parramatta had Penrith measure in the first half for intensity,
mm-hmm.
but they couldn't match him in the second half,
mm-hmm.
and stick with him when it mattered. And Penrith only put on two tries, obviously very, very quick succession there, just before the hour mark. And there's no points scored after that,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't need to be, because once Penrith got in front, they just go, right, all we've got to do is keep them out. And that's their focus. It's not on scoring more points. It's about stopping more points from being scored.
Yeah.
And when you've got a team that functions that way, you've got to be throwing something pretty damn special at them consistently in attack.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that Parramatta failed to do, and a lot of clubs failed to do it, is they do really well defensively whenever Penrith were, you know, bringing the ball out of their own half. And sometimes they kept Penrith from getting out of their own half, but they never shut down Cleary.
Yeah.
And so every time that looked like they'll get in the upper hand, Cleary would just fire a long kick down, and it always found the ground. So Gutherson was turned around and come back. And by the time he's gone around and come back, the Panthers' defense is right back on top of them. They've got to restart and go through that whole two-set period again of making the meters, putting them under pressure, and then being good defensively, and then one kick. And they're back two sets again, and it all starts all over again.
Mm-hmm.
That's what hurt them the most, was Cleary's long kicking game, and they never shut him down.
And that's been the Panthers' game plan for forever. Like, you know, get the lead, and then good luck trying to break our line. You know, and we'll keep you in your quarter. Like, Penrith's defense is so good that they can literally think, we're going to keep you within your like quarter of the field for 25 minutes and do it.
Mm.
It's outrageous when they're in that sort of mood. And it felt like in that second half, the Panthers turned up, you know. we've all been watching them in the preseason and, you know, against the Storm, it was a very high intensity game towards the end of it in that game. But it felt weird seeing Penrith not being able to break down the Storm. And then in that first half, it's like, oh, man, this could go either way. And then the Panthers turned up in the second half. And when they're on, they're outrageous. And they do things that – they do things in like every set of six that are incredible defensively. And, yeah, Parramatta just didn't really get a chance in that second half to do anything. And it was you know, it was good to see for the Panthers. And then, I mean, this week they're coming up against the Broncos. The Broncos won't have Adam Reynolds, so it's, you know, it's not really a fair fight. But it's going to be cool to see how the Broncos do play without Reynolds. And I don't want to see the Broncos get belted. I need to see the Broncos at least turn up and go toe-to-toe with the Panthers and feel as though that, you know, they're on that level with the Panthers, even though they don't have their halfback. And we're going to see it. That's the cool thing about this year. Like, you kind of think about all of these different teams and how they match up, and then you get to see it, and it's like, it's been such a great season. I've loved it.
It's definitely going well. the Tigers got off to a steady start against the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
32-12. Now, as you know from when we did our last episode, I didn't think the Tigers were going to win this.
No.
And I did say they just had to try and keep the score down. I don't know if they achieved that too well. Defensively, tackling-wise, much, much better. They was much lower number of missed tackles and ineffective tackles. The problem they did have, though, was ill discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Too much drop ball, conceded far too many penalties, gave away too many set restarts, and all that did was just constantly put themselves under pressure and gave Canberra repeat sets of six. And it doesn't matter who you're playing against. Every team in this comp who's finished in the top 10, 12 last year, if they get enough repeat sets, they will score points.
Yeah.
And the Tigers are not a team that's in a position to be able to chase points comfortably. So this is why I was saying, like, they need to work on their defense. It wasn't a horrible result for them. There's plenty they can work on. There's plenty to be happy with. As I said, defensively with the tackles, I'll stick into the tackles a lot better than they were last year. Keep doing that. Keep getting better on that. And work on the discipline in defense especially. Things will turn. And it won't take long either. It'll only be a few weeks and you'll start getting that odd win here and there. That's all it takes. Then you get a little bit of confidence. Things start to pick up after that. So it wasn't a horrible performance. Completions were pretty handy. They showed a bit of variation with their kicking game, which is something we haven't seen for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a horrible performance. And
to keep it, when you keep in mind, like, how bad this season's going to be bad, like, and we've talked about it, and this could have been a 50-point loss, but it wasn't, and that's the encouraging part.
Yeah, well, typically it has been.
Yeah, exactly. I think that some of the things that I took out of this game, Galvin was fantastic in his first grade match. He looks like he's got the goods.
Yeah.
I was watching him play because there was talk about when the Tigers signed Luai for next year that the Panthers might do a swap for him. And I'm watching him play and I'm like, man, can you imagine if this dude was on the Panthers? Like, it would have been disgusting.
Yeah.
Because he looks like he's got the goods. He really took control of the team. Just looked like a first grader. And that's, you know, when you've got a half that comes in and he's first grade and he plays like that, normally it goes on to be something pretty good. So that was good to see. Sullivan at halfback, I didn't think was all that good.
Mm-mm.
And then Caesar comes on and I was like, this is maybe worse.
Yeah.
And then they...
I'll forgive Caesar, okay, because he's been out of the NRL for a while and he doesn't have the youth of Sullivan on his side. But I did expect more from him. Admittedly, he did only get 25 minutes as well, which is going to be hard for any halfback to lay any sort of platform. But I think when Caesar came on, very little change from the halfback perspective. And it was like you look at it and go, what's the point of carrying a halfback on the bench if they don't provide anything when they come on?
Exactly. And the other thing I thought when Caesar came on was, and watching him play, was like, for the previous Tigers administration and coach in Tim Sheens, like, Aiden Caesar was the featured buy. Like, they got Sullivan really late. So Sullivan was kind of a like, let's get this guy if we can, and we might get something out of him, we'll see. But Aiden Caesar was going to be the halfback for the team, like, for the entire year. So when I saw him come on, I'm like, man, this was the previous administration's plan.
Yeah.
And it just really showed like how terrible it was. The other thing that stood out for me too, I guess, was I don't know who they talk to. I don't know who they get drunk. I don't know who they, you know, have pictures, compromising pictures in the manila folder that they hand somebody. But the Tigers need to find a club that will take Bateman off their hands, even if they have to pay 80% of his contract, because he is a giant liability in this team and they just can't keep playing him.
Yeah. I thought, you know, you know, if I was to be as optimistic as possible, I thought, you know, maybe he'll just go, you know what, I've got last year out of the system. We've got a new coach, new direction. Let's start afresh. And just the same garbage.
Yeah. Like, he's talking shit to the Raiders while the Tigers are down by, like, 20 yeah. points. And,
yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
I don't know how the Tigers work with him. I think what they need in the second row now is a worker, mm-hmm. an absolute toiler, not this bloke who thinks he's, you know, fucking Ellery Hanley. You ain't, mate. I'd rather see, you know, as I said, like a toiler. I'd, you know, put 12 there. I don't care. Somebody who's just going to make do, hit ups, run straight, and make tackles, because the moment the Tigers need to work solely on trying to shore up their defense everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're struggling to get points against any team, you will start taking risks and chances to try and get through. And that's when turnovers happen. That's what the Tigers are going to get doing. At the moment, there's still avenues where teams can get through and put points on without having to graft for too long to do it. And so the Tigers are constantly chasing points on the back foot. And it comes down to defense. If your defense is looked after and you've got that shit going tight and no one can get through, or if they do get through, they've got to throw everything at you and it takes them ages to get through, then that means that the same thing is going to work twice. They've got to rely more and more heavily on luck. Look at Penrith over the last 4 years.
Mm.
How many of the tries, whenever they've lost games, how many of them are through, you know, a little bit of luck coming your way?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, yeah. Look, even there, everyone relies on wins for luck. Everyone relies on luck for wins, sorry. But, you know, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Like, there are the tries that you've got to work your ass off all game to get. And then there's the ones where it's like some crazy pass or some kick that bounces just right or bounces up over the fullback's head the opposite way because the ball is a, you know, as I say, whoever designed a rugby league ball was a sadistic bastard. You need those little lucky things, but you don't need them as much against the Tigers, unfortunately. And it's going to be a really rough season for them. I'd be shocked looking at them if they didn't win the wooden spoon, and Benji Marshall's going to get hammered in the media over it. No matter what. I mean, he's getting hammered before he'd even coached a game properly. So it's just going to be one of those seasons for Tigers fans, but it's at least it has a chance to get better now, which it didn't before.
Yeah, there was one shining light, and that was young bench player Samuel Afainu. And I think he got injured and he might be missing this weekend, but he had a very, very strong game as well on the bench. So I wouldn't be surprised if, with any luck, he might push Bateman out of the team.
Fingers crossed. Oh, by the way, before we go, just for Canberra Raiders fans who fucking cry every time that they're not mentioned by anybody.
Oh, hang on, were they in this game?
Nah, fuck them. Let's talk about the next game. What did you think of Knights versus Cowboys?
I fucking hated this game.
Yeah, it was a rough one.
Just some of the absolute amateurish bullshit that the Cowboys were doing in the first half. Like Valentine Holmes dropped the ball twice, cold without a human on him.
Mm-hmm.
Chad Townsend failed to find touch twice in the first half. Just what the fuck? Adam Elliott scored an absolute peach of a try, his first one. The second one was a very good pass, but it was from a bloke who was, I think, playing in the front row, the second row, passed the ball to him, flat, gorgeous ball, fuck me. But the goal line defense of the Cowboys was just watching it. And, I mean, mm-hmm. Elliott had a double. He barely scores tries in his career. He's got two in 35 minutes.
Yeah.
And again, that leads to the next point. How is it that the Cowboys were that absolute garbage and the Knights only led 12-0 half time?
And that's the thing. And we talked about these two teams felt very similar in a lot of ways going into this match, and I think it bared out. And we said it saying that the Cowboys are the more talented of the two teams, you know. The Cowboys, I think the Cowboys are lazy. I really do. And I think that they make silly errors. Their execution's really poor. And I think with the Knights, I mean, they had that run at the end of last year that everyone went crazy over and then just got to the finals and weren't a factor at all. I think that, like, the Knights are playing about as good as they can. I think that that's their ceiling. I don't think that they are a finals team, but they might still make it. We'll see. But this Cowboys team has the ability to be a top four side without question on talent. But they're lazy. They're so fucking lazy that they could miss the finals themselves. And it makes me wonder about, you know, Todd Payton's coaching. Like, while everyone else has had a crushing off season of just everyone needs to get as fit as the Panthers, everyone's worked on their defense and stuff, and the Cowboys just look the same.
I'm not going to say anything about Todd Payton.
Well, he's terrifying. I mean,
mate, nightmares have nightmares about Todd Payton. Can you imagine those Cowboys players after that first half? They're running off the field and they hear the bell and they're half up the tunnel going, oh, fuck. And then the door shut behind them. You can't leave this hell house now, buddy. And they go in there and Todd's just standing there quiet, staring at him. And he goes open his mouth and they all just start crying.
Yeah. They're like, we're sorry, we'll go win the game.
He looks at them and says, I swear to God, if I have to raise my voice just a little bit higher than this, I will murder every single one of your people that you fuckers love. Every single one of them. I've done it before. I'll do it again. Don't fucking test me. It's the Knights for fuck's sake. I'm done. I'm not coming back into this room and you're not seeing me until you've got a win or my hands are covered in blood. That's where we're at.
And they chose to win, which was probably smart.
Safe plan. Yeah. But that's what would have happened. And he's just left the room. He probably didn't even sit there for the second half. He's just got a cardboard cutout just out of there. He's just gone, I'm going home and I'm going to go around. I'm going to get Chad Townsend's house first. I'm just going to be watching the score on the app. If I see that score's down, I'm just going to go, right, who's first?
Just starts hunting them just ahead of time, man. But yeah, that, like, the Cowboys, I see nothing that's changed from them last year, and they just weren't good enough last year. The other thing was, like, there was a lot of talk about Taumalolo and his knee injury that he's carrying, and it's something that he'll have to manage for the rest of his career. And he's noticeably slower, and it's affected his mobility. I wonder if he needs to drop a few kilos.
I was going to say exactly the same thing.
Yeah, and just for it to be less mass for him to have to carry around. Like, he's always been this gigantic dude, and the weird thing was that he was a gigantic dude that could, you know, tap dance his way through the line. But I think that now, maybe just to take pressure off his knees, maybe he needs to drop some of them kilos to keep his career going forward, because he's really struggling with it. And it's really sad to see him being one of my favorite players I've ever watched and an all-time great. And I want to see him playing for another 5 years or so at the very least, because he can.
I've got an idea.
Mm.
It's a little bit, just a little bit outside of the box.
Okay.
Right. Put him on the bench.
Yeah.
When he comes on the field, put him on one edge. Doesn't have to be playing wide, just put him on one edge,
mm-hmm.
right? You bring him on the field, say, 10, 15 minutes before halftime. So then he plays 10, 15 minutes. He gets that 10-minute break at halftime. Give him another 10, 15, 20 minutes after half. Bring him off. And you're getting him at his, yeah, and you're getting him on one edge down one corridor. Play him like the Bulldogs are using at the moment with Kikau.
Kikau, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You don't have to play him really wide, And because a lot of teams are now playing a little bit wider and they're defending a little bit wider, if he's just a bit inside of that, he's going to be drawing defences into the middle. And we all know he's got a good offload. If he can get an offload away and there's someone trailing behind him, like Drinkwater or even Daylight, dish the ball out to the wide, they're probably going to create an overlap out of it. Just thinking. Just spitballing.
I wonder if, like, in the right situation, it wouldn't be as much of an issue. Like, because if he's not carrying the Cowboys pack, they're on the back foot. And so it really stands out when you see him not, like, dominating the game. But I do, yeah, I wonder if you did put him in a very... Like, if he went to the Storm, I have no doubt that Bellamy would say, this is the one thing we want you to do, and all of a sudden he'd be rampaging on the edges or something like that. I don't know. I just don't like seeing it. I don't like seeing a great player like him he's only 30. He's got a lot of football still ahead of him. He should be, like, just coming into his absolute prime right now, and it's clear that he's really struggling with this. So, like, I wonder if they need to send him over to bloody Germany like they did with Kobe Bryant when he had a knee injury and all of a sudden he went to Germany and come back and his knee was fine. They need to do something like that with him because there's too much footy left in him for it to get to this point, you know?
That's right. What was the next game? Oh, Melbourne versus the Warriors. I didn't get to watch all of this game.
Mm-hmm.
I was preoccupied doing some research and stuff, but I had it on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped watching it when I saw the Warriors and sort of skipped away a little bit. I went, oh, well, good for the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned it back when I saw something crazy in the corner of my eye. And it was just a human flying for about 3.5 days. And I went, the fuck is this shit? And that was the match-winning try. What an insane try that was by Xavier Coates.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I thought that people saying, oh, is this the greatest try in history? I was like, can we all just calm down, please? But it was a cool way to finish the game for the Storm, at least. It was heartbreaking for the Warriors because now they're 0-2. And you look at their season, how it started. They've got a sellout crowd. They start on fire and then they lose. Then they've got this game. I think they were up by 8 points with 3 minutes to go and they lose.
Yeah.
The good thing is, though, that in this game, they showed that they can go toe-to-toe with a really good team away from home in Australia. And so that's something that they can build upon.
And I mean, they came back from a 12-point deficit at halftime to take quite a considerable lead coming into the last, you know, 3 minutes of the match.
Yeah.
That's a good fight back. There's a lot of good to take out of this for the Warriors. If Coates doesn't get that ball down, and that's very doable given the insanity of the try,
mm-hmm.
they've got to win.
Yeah.
They've won the game. So, as I was saying before, sometimes you just need that bit of luck to go your way.
Exactly.
And a bit of luck. One for the Storm and cost the Warriors.
And I think the other thing, too, that the Warriors can look at is, like, they can say, well, look, we lost in the last seconds to a team that in their first 2 weeks of this season have done some fucking crazy shit in both games. So, you know, ironically, it was a game that made me think the Warriors are going to be okay this year. Whereas last week I was really worrying about the Warriors. I was like, oh, that loss to the Cronulla Sharks was it was a concern for me. But after this game, I was like, no, the Warriors are going to be all right this year. So, and the Storm, I mean, far out. Like,
I'll tell you what, there's one stat that's usually pretty closely linked
mm-hmm.
with winning games, and that is meters run.
Mm-hmm.
And usually if you've run more meters than your opposition, more often than not, you've won the game of footy. In this game, the Warriors ran nearly 300 metres more than the Storm and lost. I'd imagine that would be very rare to have had that much extra metres than the opponent and to have lost the games.
I believe that they ran more metres last week against the Cronulla Sharks too, more metres than them. I'm pretty sure that was the case.
It's pretty insane. And the Warriors are very good at making meters up the middle at the moment too.
Yeah.
They had nearly 600 post-contact meters, which is just fucking nuts.
That's outrageous, yeah. But
they had, 500 more meters than the Sharks.
There you go. Like, it's a good problem to have, that you're smashing through teams and you just need to work out the rest. Because normally that the rest is, you're not even thinking about it because you're on the back foot. So they're all right. They've just got to work the rest of it out.
Now, off to the most important news of the day.
Yeah.
Luke Brooks undefeated.
Yeah, everyone's jumping up and down about him.
I hear they've now built 4 statues for him at Brookvale.
They might as well. It doesn't take much bronze.
At this rate, they will fill the entire sitting area at Brookvale with Luke Brooks statues, and they'll have to put all the spares on North Sydney Oval.
That'll be great.
It will be great.
They had
over 700 post-contact meters, which is just insane.
Yeah, this game flattered the scoreline. It was, 21-14. It heavily flattered the Roosters.
Oh, yeah.
The Roosters are, I think we both said it, that they're not as good as the media is saying. I just don't think they're good at all. I've been pretty adamant about that. And this game really showed all of the reasons. Their forward pack is soft to okay at their best. Their halves are unreliable. And look, Keary is already out with the head knock, and I'd be shocked if he didn't retire. You know, their best player is a step slower. You know, Teddy Tedesco, he's been a very good player for a long time, and Father Time beats everyone. And, like, he's still a good player. I'm not saying he's not a good player, but he's not what he once was. And some of the, they spent so much, they've got so much money wrapped up in fucking outside backs. It's insane.
Do you think, and I'm not suggesting that this is an idea, okay, but knowing how this tends to be a bit of a trend ever since Darren Lockyer, do you think Tedesco could make the move to 5'8"?
I don't.
Because I have seen a few people around the traps suggesting that maybe that's the best option, so that they can get Manu at fullback and cover Kiri's loss.
Well, look, this is the problem the Roosters have, right? If you're going to be cutthroat, you go to Tedesco and you say, you're moving on. And Manu, it would already have been done, right? It probably would have been this year. But they don't want to do that. And it's going to cost them Manu, because he's going over to play, I believe, Japanese rugby league. Rugby union, sorry, is the latest thing. It's going to cost them him. And, it's too late.
Now, I will say, a huge change in form for Victor Radley.
Well, he stayed on the field.
Well, he conceded no penalties. He wasn't sin-binned. He had no hamstring errors. He made over 100 metres. If he does this every week, he will actually be a useful human in that pack.
Yeah, he'll be a first grader. That'd be good, eh?
Because we know he can do it. We've seen him do it in the past.
But for some reason,
he seems to think that he's some hard ass who needs to prove himself by being a dickhead.
Yeah, it's crazy. By the way, speaking of hard asses, how good was it to see the enforcer, Jared Worree Hargraves, back enforcing? Wasn't that just enforceful?
It was the most enforcing 33 minutes I'd ever seen. It was up there with that great stint that Sonny B. Williams had when he came back. Remember that one? We did an episode about that.
That's hilarious. Oh, my God, he's back, he's back. It's like, where?
Who?
But, yeah, look, this Roosters team, they're a little bit like the Cowboys in that I've seen I just don't see any evolution in their team. They're just doing the same shit they did last year, but maybe a little bit worse. Trent Robinson has yet to show that he can change tact as a coach, hey?
No, it seems now that the more and more this team ages, the more and more the game plan becomes, let's help Tedesco get his kick return in, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Yeah, yeah. And look, Walker is a halfback who he has had promising things that he's done, really promising things. But he's getting bashed out of the game. And, you know, it's that all of the problems we talked about with the Roosters last year, they've still got them now. And I just wonder if Trent Robinson's just another Dez Hasler. You know, he comes in at the right time with the right team. Everyone says he's a super coach. And then we wait for him to do some more coaching and he just never does it. It never changes.
I rate him a little bit ahead of Hasler, but not by much. Yeah, he sustained success for a lot longer than Hasler did.
He had a younger team than Hasler did.
Yeah,
well, Hasler also left his team. They won the premiership and he left.
Yeah.
I think it probably would have been...
Well, that shows where his intellect's at, doesn't it?
Well, for all that money, I bet he has a nice house, eh?
He probably does.
I mean, it's 2024 and Dez Hasler's a fucking NRL coach.
Yeah, this is true.
And it's kind of shocking. It was over. It was over.
Don't know how we managed that.
Good luck to him. We've had a hair. It's a bad sign.
That's true. We'll round out the round with the Dolphins and the Dragons. And the Dolphins just basically took a turd on the Dragons.
Yeah, and all, you know, Flanagan last week in the press conference, he was talking a big game, and then all of a sudden they get flogged. It's the biggest, I think it was their biggest loss in the NRL, since the NRL started, when they become a merged entity, I believe. Oh, no, it wasn't their biggest loss. Their biggest loss by nil?
But that's hardly a stat. I'll look it up, though.
Yeah, it's, I know. I heard it said on the commentary, and I was like, felt bad.
That's like the stats I make up when you're just trying to scratch around for something. Oh, I wonder what their record's like on May the 2nd.
These are the things that we look up after the podcast is finished.
Yeah, so they lost 38-0 to the Bulldogs in 2018.
Yeah, but this is their biggest loss.
To nil?
Oh, it's 38-0, yeah. So it equaled it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't actually break the record. So it's actually not important at all.
Okay.
Well, thanks for the stat radio.
Biggest win in Dolphins history.
It probably is. Let me check. Although they had a good start last year.
I need this game to be significant, Andrew. If you could just fucking give me that would be lovely, all right?
Yeah, look, I'll give you that. They beat their previous record, which is when they beat the Warriors 34-10 last round last year.
There we go. I'm good. I'm satisfied now.
You're satisfied now. We've got you something. Oh, yeah. No, it was... I don't know. What are you going to do, Flano? Save somebody else?
It'll be interesting to see what it does.
As this Dragons completion. 10 incomplete sets out of 39.
Wow.
Gave away 400 metres. God, where's kick return meters? 107 to 234.
Fuck.
They're not even getting their sets off to a good start.
Mm.
Getting monstered there. Yeah, missed tackles are about okay. 13 errors to 5. That's not great.
I felt a lot better about the Dragons being the second last place team.
I got a question for you about
than
this.
Than I did last week. Yeah, go on.
Who looks worse at the moment from what we've seen so far, the Tigers or the Dragons?
Oh, the Tigers. The Tigers. I think the Dragons do have more talent. I mean, Ben Hunt alone, Sully, you know, McNuggets. I know Luciano Leilua looks like he's allergic to something. He's eating something that he's allergic to. But
work.
But when he gets into match fitness, he's an all right player. So they do have a little bit of talent there, whereas the West Tigers don't have as much, I don't think.
Well, the Tigers are 12th on the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
That's still above where they where they're probably going to be at the end of the year.
Yeah.
But we'll take it.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got the Sharks this week at Leichhardt. The last time the Tigers played the Sharks at Leichhardt, the Sharks, I think it was Paul Gallen's last regular season game, and he kicked a field goal. The most disrespectful field goal a human being could ever kick in a game of rugby league anywhere ever. Paul Gallen kicks one.
But you got to remember, he is one of the great natural athletes that we've ever had. For how long he played, the way his body changed from when he started as a first grader to how it ended, where he was a front rower that would play like 80 minutes and make 50 tackles. And it's just incredible. Then he went into boxing after it. Boxing for years and years after. Just a natural athlete.
Naturally aspirated.
Yeah.
What else have we got? I've not paid any attention to the English Super League this year yet. So I'm going to go and have a look at their ladder.
Okay. By the way, did you see the thing where there was a former Featherstone player? There was a former player that
yes.
They, a testimonial for him. They still do testimonials over in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And although we had one with, who was it, Cameron Smith?
And everyone got the shits over it because they wanted to know if that money was going to be included in the salary cap or not.
Yeah. But that was kind of done on the, like that was all of a sudden it had happened and you're like, wait, what the fuck happened? Testimonial game. But yeah, he had a testimonial game and Featherstone hasn't paid him the money. And then there's former Featherstone players and people that have worked at the club that are alleging that Featherstone haven't paid them money that they're owed as well. And it was funny because I was thinking about that in terms of like all of those players that said, yeah, let's start a really good players union because of suspensions and stuff. And it's like, there are people not getting paid. What about that? Nothing. Silence. Nothing.
Yeah, crickets.
Yeah. Stupid. So dumb.
Speaking of dumb,
mm-hmm.
Remember how IMG decided that London Broncos should be coming up? Was it their decision that they come up to Super League this year, even though they didn't? Did they earn the right? I can't remember.
They earned the right.
They did earn the right. That's right. But they're not going to be included the year after or something like that. It's some weird thing like that.
I'm not sure if there's been anything given to. I remember when they did the scoring. Where they scored each team, that London was very far down that list.
Yeah. I think that's what the criticism was, is why would you allow London to come up if the rating system is going to see them drop out anyway?
Mm.
And people are sort of rubbing it in their faces now because the Broncos have lost all five games so far this year and their average score for their games is 44-10.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. That's why promotion and relegation is such shit.
Yeah. Castleford also have lost all five of their games,
mm-hmm.
and their average score line is 35-11.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hull FC third last, one win, four losses, and they're getting pumped as well.
Hull FC needs a new owner. I don't know if I don't know what the deal is, but they need a new owner. That's what it comes down to. They've had plenty of coaches.
Should merge with Hull KR.
Well, I believe that they have merged their lower grades with Hull, or their junior system with Hull KR, which is fucking ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
and is only going to be happening for cost cutting measures. But yeah, they just need a new owner. The rot starts from the top, and they've been really bad for quite a while now, and that's what it comes down to.
So the other news, another thing I'm going to ask. Is Warrington are currently on top of the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
At what point of the season do they choke?
Oh, September.
September? Do you reckon they'll get that far into the year?
You reckon that they'll choke before it? Do you reckon that they could miss the finals, Steve?
No, they'll make the finals, but I think they'll choke well before.
Okay.
Like they'll sneak into the finals.
I just have no doubt that they'll choke. It's just what they do. They there's choke.
There's a run here in the middle of the season that I think is going to kill them.
Mm.
Okay, and this is in mid-May. They got Hull KR, Catalan, Wigan, Salford, Hull, Huddersfield, Leeds, St Helens, Wigan. than Hulk AR again.
Wow, that's a rough trot, that is.
Yeah. I think they're going to do a fair bit of hurt in there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they get their confidence back for the easier run home after that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I think they might scrape in. But they do love a good choke.
Yeah, they do. They do. We'll find out, I guess, eh?
We will.
What did you think about Latrell Mitchell's post-game interview with Triple M where he was swearing through it? What did you think of that? And then what did you think of the reaction to it?
I think it was silly on his behalf to do all that swearing. I'm not offended by it because, I mean, they're words. He gives a fuck. Mm-hmm. He's not abusing anyone or insulting anyone. He's just speaking as he does at the time, you know, fresh off the field. There's obviously an element of frustration there too, given how much he put into the team's performance
mm-hmm.
and how poorly they've been playing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be an element of frustration come in there as well. So I kind of get it. I'm not going to sit there and say that he should do this or he should do that. But I think it was a bit silly to, you know, drop one or two swear words and go, oh, you know, sorry, didn't mean to do that amount of swearing. But to just keep running with it, that was probably the mistake that he shouldn't have done. Everyone will forgive one or two swear words if you're sort of caught in the moment and then you realize, oh, hang on, I shouldn't have said that.
Mm.
They'll gloss over and move on. The fact that he says, I don't care if you don't like the swearing or not. Yeah, that was a bit childish.
I understand him getting to the point where he's just like, fuck it.
Oh, look, and with the media, absolutely.
Mm.
Absolutely. They've done nothing but shit on him the whole time.
Mm. Over everything. Yeah. Everything.
Yeah, but for what reason?
Yeah.
They won't come out and tell us the reason why. Now, there was an article that came out from, God, it might have been that dickhead Richie again, saying that something along the lines of, oh, I tried to speak to Latrell and he wouldn't talk to me, something like that. And I heard someone say, maybe Dean Richie needs to get some thick skin and just move on from it, which is a throwback to the comment Richie made about Latrell Mitchell constantly going on about how he's going to stand up against all the racist stuff that goes on in the, you know, it gets directed towards him on social media and at games and stuff like that.
Yeah, look, Dean Richie's the worst.
He's a pot plant.
Terrible.
And not a useful pot plant. He's one that you know is going to die, so you've got to stuff a plastic one in there so that when it does die, there's still something that resembles plant life there, but you know it's all fake. And it doesn't matter what you feed it, it's still fake. It's still shit, and you don't need it. That's seriously the other thing. Don't need it.
The sooner AI is writing the articles instead of these fucking dumb idiots.
How do we know it's not?
It could be.
It's just the robot's gone. You know, someone's typed in, okay, give me an image of a 30-year rugby league sports journalist veteran. And then that's what comes up is Dean Richie. Oh, yeah, he looks like he fits the part. Okay. Now wine.
Yeah, so say you're putting together a modern day corporate media article and you go to the AI and say, okay, I need to find the result for a game. Okay, I've got that. I need to talk about anything except that result for this game. Anything at all. And I need it to sound really whingy. And slightly bitchy as well. I need it to say somewhere this masthead. I don't even know what that means, but I've been given a directive to call it this masthead.
Ooh, praise Peter Valandis.
I need to. What's another word for sucking dick? But I need to use that word over Peter Valandis. And then I need to...
I'll tell you what, AI does like parameters, so this is working well.
Yeah. And then if
anyone knows how to get this stuff working, Stuart can punch out for us. We'll read it out in the next episode.
And then I need to wrap it up by saying that Flanagan saved the world.
Yes, and fuck Benji Marshall for not trying hard enough.
I've seen in here you've said Ricky Stewart needs to win. No. I need that part removed.
Yeah,
Ricky
get Stewart rid of that.
Cannot be under any pressure at all.
No. He's a god above men.
Mm-hmm.
I know the saying is God amongst men. He's not amongst men. He's above them. That is fact. That's where he's at. I reckon AI could get that done.
That would be great. I'd read that article.
Instead, if someone wants to do that, I will read it out on the next episode. Absolutely.
And by the way, and then put my name at the bottom. Now put it behind a paywall.
That's the key part. That's the kicker.
That's the main part.
Now, there was an article today, and it was about the Leichhardt Oval is facing NRL extinction within the next year or two.
Excellent. Finally.
And Fox League asked the question, who's going to come up with the $40 million? And my response is, $40
million? $40
million? That's not even close to enough.
No. I mean, if you just go buy Penrith's fucking renovations, $40 million is going to get you the footpath leading to the stadium.
Now, let's be clear here about why it's not going to be enough. They've got one entire grandstand that you cannot use at Leichhardt Oval because it's got white ants all through it. Well, it probably doesn't have white ants. White ants are probably already gone now. However,
they moved out. They moved somewhere better.
They've had their meal. They've left.
There's no wood left.
But you need to spend money purely on pulling all of that down to make it safe.
Yeah.
And clearing it out. That's not even talking about building something new there. That's just to clear it out. Because that is genuinely a hazard. That's safe. It's condemned, that stand. You can't go near it. That's there. We saw it at a rugby union game that's held there. What was it last year? The bloody railing fell over and people fell onto the ground. That's a different section.
People got hurt. There was two things that were crazy about that. That there were people at a rugby union game, number one, and that the stadium fell down.
Yeah. Well, the second one's probably less crazy.
True.
As expected. The ground does not have a actual big screen. They've got to rent one in. I believe some of the lighting has to be brought in and rented out as well. These are things that cost the club money every time they play a night game there. And for some reason, the club had constantly been accepting night games there, which just makes it more expensive. And when you can't fill the stadium as much because half the venue can't be used, it makes it harder to get the money through the gates to pay for all the stuff you've got to pay to have the game on at nighttime, which is a stupid business operation.
If I said to you, the West Tigers have moved half of their games to the Sydney Football Stadium, right? It would make sense business-wise, but you'd say, that's fucking ridiculous. They're called the West Tigers. But the difference between Leichhardt and the SFS, it's not that far. Like I've driven it. It's not that far.
It's just down the road.
Yeah. So just ditch Leichhardt.
Yeah, look, to be honest, this is the opportunity that the club needs. And now it looks like it's going to be forced into it, to move out to Campbelltown. I mentioned this on Twitter today. And people were saying, oh, they can't go out there because then they're going to alienate half their fan base. I was like,
that's what the football's been doing.
That doesn't matter now. We've got to stop worrying about the fan base that's there now and think about the fan base of the future.
Yeah.
Because
at
the moment, we still have a lot of players who are playing in the MacArthur region and they never come up through the ranks to play for the West Tigers. They go and play for other clubs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a failure. That is an absolute failure. Those players should be going directly into the West Tigers. And the only way that's going to happen is if they have regular access to that club and the club is making a regular effort in that area, and they're just not.
And, you know, one of the things that people forget sometimes about stadia is that the corporate money that comes in from having corporate facilities that are worth buying for you know, corporations that want to hold events or whatever. They want to make it a good night out for all their clients and stuff like that. That is a significant amount of money. Every time you play a game at Leichhardt, you're leaving all that money on the table. And you are not just leaving a little bit of it, you're leaving a lot of it compared to most other stadiums around Sydney. Even some of the oldest, like, there are, because I've talked to people about this that work at clubs, there are some older stadiums that are seen as traditional grounds where they lose a fair bit of money playing games there because they can't cater to the corporate clients. Whereas you look at somewhere like Parramatta Stadium, you can. They've got those facilities and it works out great. Same with the Sydney Football Stadium, it'll work out great. So, you know, all of that money that gets left on the table every single time they play a game at Leichhardt Oval, and that's not even to mention the capacity is pretty low for a footy stadium. It's not even mentioning how much you probably lose in terms of, you know, how much they sell for all the catering and stuff like that. It's just losing money. You can't play there.
No, it makes so little sense to play there.
Mm.
And I would also argue that half their fan base is not in the Balmain region or even in the inner western part of Sydney. You can't think that that's the case anymore. It's the National Rugby League. You're going to have fans all over the place and all over Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of the fans are not going to be like Balmain or Western Suburbs aligned anymore. You've got to realise that there are people now in their 20s who never saw either of those two clubs play. The club's 25 years old. 30-year-olds might have seen them when they were 5 years old.
Yeah.
Let that sink in. The Balmain West thing is no more. It's no longer something they can use as a crutch to just justify playing at Leichhardt and stuff like that anymore. Take the games out to Campbelltown and say to the government, now, next year, we're going to start playing, 10 games a year at Campbelltown. Will you please give us an absolute fuckload of cash to get this stadium a massive overhaul and get it up to the standard so that it can hold that many NRL games here and we can have, soccer games can be played out there.
Mm-hmm.
We can have more internationals played out there. We have an awful lot of internationals get played out of that ground. Now we can have a lot more being played out there. It's going to get a lot more interest. It's still a growing area, so you're going to need the venue out there. And I dare say there's a very, very large chance that the government, doesn't matter who's running the state, it doesn't matter who the local councils are, they will say yes to that because they've been lobbying for decades to get Leichhardt sorted out and fixed up. And the best they can get is maybe $40 million. And they won't get that money because they never do, because no one ever says, we need to get this ground sorted out. They just go, no. We need to pull the stand down and let dogs run on the ground here and every now and then some kids can play soccer on it because that's all it's good for now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, 100%.
I'll be honest, okay, I'm not saying this because I'm shitting on the club, okay? I have been to several games at Leichhardt Oval. I genuinely do enjoy going there. It's the historian in me, okay? I like going to these older venues where a lot of history is. But you've also got to be realistic and know that in the modern game, it's just not up to scratch.
Yeah,
and it's not the only one. Cogra's another one, not up to scratch. You know, and those two I think would be the two at the on the chopping block as far as those sort of venues go. Cogra gets away with a bit more because they don't have too much competition around them for venues. They're a bit further south. But Leichhardt it's time to move on. And yeah. You can play, do what the Bulldogs do, play one game there every year like they do at Belmore.
Look, I've been to Belmore and you go there and there's 8 parking spots. And
they more than Leichhardt has.
Yeah, exactly. And, because I've called games at Belmore and, like...
Hey, they've even got a train station nearby.
Yeah, they do. But you go there and you're like, man, this is something from the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'd much rather watch a game at Parramatta Stadium, which I've also called games at, and is Man, it's a lovely place to watch games at. I've been to Suncorp Stadium. That's the first time that I went to a stadium when I went to Suncorp, and I was like, oh, this is what it should be like. And I remember walking into the stadium and it was so easy. And I was like, wait a minute. Instead of like it being a crush and I'm waiting for 10 minutes and stuff like I was there and now I'm in here. That was so easy. And then there's not a bad seat in the house. Like they're the sort of experiences got to be given people, because rugby league, it needs to be in a rectangular stadium that's made for rectangular sports, not multi-sports, rectangular sports. And we need to not compromise on comfort and things like that, because TVs are gigantic now. They're very cheap for the size. You can sign up for however you need to watch your footy, and we're competing against that. And you want everyone to get out to the footy games. You want them to enjoy it. We want full crowds and stuff like that. And so we've got to give facilities that people are comfortable at. And it's not just like the diehards either, because sometimes people will be like, oh, I love sitting on the hill in the rain. You know, I don't mind that I can't piss for 2 hours. And like, no, it's not about that person. It's about, is it easy enough to take kids to a game? Like, can you take your family there and not have to worry that they're, you know, it's going to be a problem taking them into the bathrooms and stuff like that?
I would hate to think what it's like trying to get to Leichhardt Oval with kids.
Oh, be terrible.
I hate to think of it. It's the one thing you want, if you're taking kids, especially young kids, to football, you need that process to be as seamless as possible.
Yep.
But this is why Amy Park is really good down here, because there's two train stations nearby.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a 10-minute walk, and bam, straight in, you find your seat, you sit down, you've got a good view everywhere you go. There's toilets all around the place inside,
mm-hmm.
as you get with the stadium.
You're not going to get rained on?
No. Well, you probably are, it's Melbourne, but, you know.
Well, in the stadium,
you can get out, and it doesn't take you an age to get out. There's gates everywhere. The train stations are all close by. You can get to where you need to go. You know, you don't need to bring the car in.
Yeah.
It's a good thing about it.
The only thing you've got to worry about is starving your family for 3 days before you go to the game.
That and Victorians.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Victorian part. The fact that you've got to be in Victoria is a real issue. Who would move to Victoria, Andrew?
You'd have to be pretty unwell, I reckon.
I reckon so. Yeah, it's funny because, like, you and me both love Formula One. And it would be, normally we'd be like, let's go to the Formula One and stuff. Ah, God, it's in Victoria though. Ugh.
We've never once thought about going down here.
Never once.
Never once.
If it was in Adelaide, I bet you and me would have been to Adelaide by now. And that's Adelaide, man.
That Adelaide track though was fucking pretty damn good though.
It was a proper track.
Yeah, it was a good track. The Albert Park one, so,
bit meh.
It's mid.
It's such a shame they can't have a race in Sydney where it goes over the Harbour Bridge. It's just impossible. Because that would have been the sick as fuck, quite honestly.
I wonder where else they could have one. Maybe they could just do one over the Glee Point Bridge instead.
Well, I think that they have an issue with... There's an issue.
They could go over Tom Ugly's bridge.
The Spit Bridge. Why not that?
Cool. I don't know. See, I think the way F1 would want it to go, it's got to go past landmarks. I'd have to go over the Sydney Harbour Bridge and then past the Sydney Opera House and somehow find a loop back. It'd be a pretty big track.
Do you know this is a random, I might have mentioned it on the podcast once. It wasn't a Formula One Grand Prix race like we consider Formula One. I think it was before that. But when they had a Grand Prix that was raced in Tregear. And it was because Tregear, Whelan Reserve used to be, I believe it used to be an airfield at one point, a long, long time ago. And they had a track that they set up that was a Grand Prix track that Jack Brabham actually raced at. And it was sort of all around this track part that was in the thing, and then the cars went up sort of a straight into Tregear and then come back down to the track. And when I was a kid, I would obviously, you know, played sport there and ride my bike down there and stuff like that. And it was a little bit away from where I lived. But it had this weird go-kart track that it was just this paved track that you were like, what is this? There's never been go-karts here. I don't understand what it was. And I think what it was because it was a heritage sort of thing. Someone said, well, let's do this part of the old track with some pavement. And yeah, so I think I wrote a little bit about it on my website once. But yeah, really weird to think that they had a Grand Prix there, but it wasn't like what we think of a Grand Prix now. It was like what in the old days when they'd have Grand Prix kind of everywhere.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, really weird, hey?
Maybe they should bring one back.
A Grand Prix and have it in Tregear.
Tregear, Penrith.
That'd be cool. Now, so you're talking about two different places now, man. Now you're getting my heckles up, all right?
No, mate. I'm saying the one track covers the whole area.
Just if you fucking, you're racing for 17 kilometres.
It's got to fit in with the suburb, doing laps of the whole region. All those suburbs, all of them. Get them all together. Kingswood, the whole lot of them. And you just do laps of the whole lot.
I've always felt like Ropes Creek reminded me a lot of Monaco. Wow.
To be honest, Ropes Creek needs to get a lot more sports and sports match events and stuff going on there.
It's already got the cars there.
Mate, if I could have 10 minutes, I'll sit down and draw out a map on the roads of Ropes Creek and we'll have a Ropes Creek F1 race. I bet it would look better than the Las Vegas track and the Miami one. And yeah, that wouldn't be hard to do.
Any worse than some of those fucking shit house places where they're in an industrial area? Fuck.
Remember the one they had that was the MGM car park or whatever?
Yeah.
Caesars Casino?
The Caesars Palace Grand Prix.
Oh, that thing was dog's breakfast. What were we talking about again?
We're a footy podcast. Hey, oh, by the way, while we're talking about stadiums, did you see the news that came out today where there was a recommendation to the Queensland government who are hosting, I believe it's the 2032 Olympic Games.
Yeah.
And they said that they recommended that they paid $3.7 billion to build a brand new stadium for the games. And I think that's a lot of money.
That's a whack.
Yeah.
It says the showpiece venue will host the 2032 Olympics opening and closing ceremonies after the Queensland government confirmed it would not upgrade the Gabba or build a new stadium for the event. The old QE2 stadium will still host the athletics.
Yeah, so so here's the problem that they've got, right? Suncorp Stadium is obviously, you don't need to do anything to Suncorp, really. It does the job. But, you know, people get in and out very comfortably. It's good. It's fine. It's good for what it is. The Gabba is getting towards the end of its life and they want to upgrade that. But people don't want to spend heaps and heaps of money on it. They kind of want to do it as cheaply as possible because obviously times are tough for most people and they don't want to see billions spent on stadiums. But then they also would love to have a brand new Olympic stadium. And that's obviously building a brand new Olympic stadium is a ridiculously expensive thing. So they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, and rightfully fucking so, because if you're going to bid for the Olympics on the basis of we've already got everything we need, don't build a brand new $3.7 billion stadium, you know, to justify getting it, because that's going to be a white elephant. Like,
absolutely. And it's not a huge city that needs two massive fucking stadiums in it, let alone three.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so, no, I think the Queensland government have got it right. They've just got to say, you know what, we will do whatever little maintenance we're going to do along the way to QE2 because it might need a little bit. I don't really know. I know it's still been in use.
They're going to spend, I think it's $1 billion on that stadium to get it up to scratch, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, straight away you think, holy fuck, they're going to spend $1 billion on QE2 stadium? But that's better than $3.7 billion.
Well, yeah. by quite a lot, and that's money that they'll be spending on other parts. Like, they've got to probably build a village.
Yep.
They really should put the village out at, say, I don't know, Ipswich. That'd be good.
Do you know, I was listening to a dude that was talking about the LA Olympics. They're going to hold an Olympics in LA. I think that's in 2028. And he was talking about how they basically take over one of the colleges, the dorms for the colleges. That's their plan for that one. Because they moved away from everyone build new shit for the Olympics games because of how many white elephant facilities were being left behind. And it was, I mean, it can literally send countries broke, you know?
Yes.
So they're trying to use as many facilities that are already there. And yeah, like, I mean, you could hold an Olympic Games in Sydney like fucking next week. We've already got the shit because we already paid for it. But I'd love to know how many of those facilities get used often, you know? I mean, how often are they using the whitewater rafting and the, you know, the equestrian and all that? I bet it's not often.
Yeah, it'd be close to not at all.
I mean, how often does the fucking, you know, stadium built for shuttlecock get fucking used?
Where was that?
I don't know. I was one of those. I remember when the Olympics were coming into Sydney and they were like, you've got to go. You'll always regret it if you didn't go. Not one regret. Not one. I watched the torch being run in Mount Druitt. But that was it. That was
Did they run the torch through Ropes Creek?
No, because I wouldn't have gone to Mount Druitt if it was at Ropes Creek. would have been Tregear. Would have been good.
Will they run the torch through Ropes Creek this time around?
Be good if they did.
I think they need to. They've already ditched it once.
I remember thinking with the Sydney Olympics, the most awesome thing to do would have been to steal the torch, because this was back before 9/11, you know, mm-hmm. So security for everything was lower. To steal the torch and then to light a cigarette with it, I thought that would have been cool as fuck, even though I didn't smoke and still don't. But, you know, times have changed. Now you'd get tased.
I'd just start a barbecue with it.
It would be great.
They completely missed an opportunity there when they lit the flame there.
Well, that's what they did in Barcelona. Remember they released all the pigeons?
Yes, but they also had that pretty amazing thing where they got the archer to shoot the flame up over it. And
yeah, that was cool.
I mean, I don't know who got murdered by the arrow when it came down the other side. No one cares.
No one gave a fuck.
We don't care who this kills. Someone just got speared with a burning arrow. Said, hey, don't worry about it. The flame's eternal.
I never thought of that.
You might be dead, but who cares?
Hey, where'd that flame and arrow end up? Wow, fuck it.
Looks awesome. Don't worry about it. But that's, yeah, they should have done that. Kathy Freeman gets the torch, and then she just goes over and just lights up a two burner.
That would be great.
A bunch of people just get there, cook up a few snags.
Starts doing a barbecue. That'd be fantastic.
How much more Aussie do you need? So Queensland, there's your opportunity. Don't fuck it up this time. By the way, it's 15 kilometres between the QE2 stadium and Suncorp Stadium.
That's not bad. Closer
down the road.
That's closer than Tregear is to Penrith by 2 km.
There you go. It's down the road.
Yeah.
Well,
did you see, by the way, before we go, did you see the International Rugby League downgraded
the
number of nations?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I came into the episode going, I must remember to mention this.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I did exactly that.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought it up, Andrew.
Mate, I wasn't going to let this one pass. See, they've been busy. They've gone and changed the classification of a bunch of teams, and they haven't finished yet because they've got to meet again. There's been a few teams which have lost their full membership. They've been downgraded, but there's been other teams who aren't full members who have applied to become full members. So the first meeting was about determining whether there's any full ones that need to go down. They've done that. The second meeting, which I think is probably next month, will be to determine who goes up. It's promotion and relegation, but at an international level.
Yeah.
You don't get relegated off Earth.
So, well, it depends if you've got some oil. I mean, if you need freedom.
If you need freedom from the IRL.
So, who got you?
International Rugby League will assist Ireland, Italy, Lebanon and Scotland to grow the game domestically after the four nations, along with Russia, were reclassified down from full members to affiliate members.
Now, here's my problem with it, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
There were teams there that were there were nations there that were involved in the last Rugby League World Cup.
Yes. So the only one on that list that was in the last World Cup that isn't impacted in their next World Cup is Lebanon, because the teams that automatically qualified are the ones who made it to the quarterfinals.
Mm-hmm.
So Lebanon were the only one of those four to qualify. So they still go to the next World Cup. The other three, though, are all out.
Now, here's my problem with it, right? Mm-hmm. We went into the last World Cup, which wasn't that very long ago. Like, yeah. It's not long enough ago that there should have been some collapse in games in all of these different countries, and there's been a massive change of circumstance and things like that. So obviously these teams weren't up to scratch going into the last World Cup, and it's not a shock, you know. And then in the World Cup, we gave these teams these places, and we had this long-ass World Cup, and none of these teams did anything. And it just makes me think, like, what the fuck are we doing with International Rugby League? Because we have so many places where the game is barely played, and we've given them, like, a free ride into the biggest rugby league tournament that we have. And it's been wasted on these teams over and over again. You and me have talked about this so many times before. So I was happy to see them kicked out. I really was, because it's like, finally we won't have to play make-believe anymore about this shit.
Yeah, I think, well, I get the impression that what's happened is some of the rules about whether you're a full member nation must have recently been redefined to be a little bit stricter, rightfully so. Because if you're a full member, you need to make sure you've got a domestic competition that is playing, and you're playing games regularly as an international outfit against, you know, the better teams in the world. That's what a full member should be doing.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
And you should be able to do it independently too.
Yeah, you shouldn't be relying on players on, you know, you're selecting because of heritage, not because the fact that they're actually born in the country that they're playing for.
Yeah.
You can't be having two different types of squads, so to speak.
Yeah, and the other thing is you shouldn't be waiting for, like, the ARL to set up some competition and, oh, you're going to be a part of that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I think what's happened is the domestic game in Ireland and Scotland particularly has been struggling for quite a long time, and they may well have been piggybacking off England for their, you know, full membership in the past. That's my opinion. That's not fact. So I don't know if that's the case or not. This is why I think, though, there must have been a change in the definitions for them to both get dropped straight away. Wales does and has always had its own domestic competition, which is why it still gets considered above those two nations. I'm fine with that. Lebanon,
are you though? Yeah. Because I'm not.
Yeah, I know you are. Lebanon has had its local competition for a while, so... but I believe it had been struggling a little bit, especially during COVID and after it.
Well, they had not only did they have COVID, but remember they had that port explosion,
which
absolutely devastated their economy.
That's right. Serbia has also had a local competition, and I wouldn't be surprised if they push for full membership if they don't already have it, because that would be long overdue, because they've been doing great work for quite a long time there. There's a bunch of other nations that have been working pretty hard as well, like Germany, Netherlands. They don't have big domestic competitions, but they do have them, and they're not going backwards, which is the main thing. So we might see that we might end up having, well, like we are going to have a smaller World Cup coming up. So the last one was 16 teams. I believe the next one's going to be 10. What happens after that, though, could change, because if this system shakes things up and does, by chance, I don't know how or whatever, but if it does see that some new nations come along, become full members, and they start growing the game in completely new markets and creates a lot of genuinely good players and brings, obviously, more sponsorship money in from other markets as well, they might consider opening it up, the World Cup, to 12 teams, which is more logical number than 10. Because whenever you have a knockout type of competition, you've always got to do it in multiples of four if you're going to make it sensible. If you're going by 10, you're just making things fucking complicated for no reason. So work into that area. Go with 12. I think 12 is probably the absolute perfect number for a Rugby League World Cup. You're not having too much, teams that are too far off the pace coming in, especially if they're full nations and they've had time to get themselves set up. It should be reasonably competitive for more games than not, unlike the last World Cup, which was just a dog's breakfast.
Oh, it was fucking devastating for the international game, once again.
The other thing that's on here says the national federations for Belgium, Denmark, Ethiopia, Latvia, Saudi Arabia, and Trinidad and Tobago are all expelled from the company following several years of inactivity. So those nations now no longer have a international rugby league.
Did you say Jamaica?
No, Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Close.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of like
it's interesting that they don't just have that as the West Indian sort.
They'll probably join them together.
I guess it'll be Caribbean. Do they still call them the West Indies in cricket?
Yeah.
Okay.
Belgium and Denmark's a bit of a surprise to a degree, because they've always been playing semi-regular on the international stage. So to be completely dropped seems a bit rash.
Should we tell our listeners about our ridiculous amount of research we did into who actually owns the international game? Do you remember that?
I can't remember it all at this stage.
It was so multi-layered and convoluted, and we found...
We'll go through it all one day, next week or so, and I'll write it all down, because if I don't know if we're going to bring it up, I would have kept notes. But yeah, okay. we basically got into the habit of just, I don't know how we went into this, looking up the ABN number for something and just started typing in random words, and then found out that there's some bloke that owns a farm somewhere and he's got the JRL.
Yeah, it's so random. Like when you go back through everything and it turns out it's just crazy. I don't want to spoil it, but it was just so weird that we were like, wait a minute. This is registered here? Wait a minute, this is the place?
Yeah.
So strange.
We'll scratch that up and try and push that out in the next episode, I think.
That sounds fair. That sounds fair.
But yeah. But no, it has been interesting that they've done that. Apparently they've had close to a dozen applicants for full membership, which will be... And these nations also that have been dropped down out of full membership, they can reapply for full membership, but only when the IRL board is satisfied that they meet all the requirements. I'm going to say this, okay. We've been very critical of the IRL, and rightfully so. I think now they're finally doing something correct, and they're sticking to their guns with it, and it's long overdue. Which I wouldn't be surprised to see, and this would be completely counterproductive, is England just says, oh, we're going to go back to being Great Britain, which means I'll just start selecting Irish, Scottish, Welsh players.
Bad thing, though?
No, it will be for Ireland and Scotland, because any chance of them becoming a nation on their own will be completely squashed, because they won't have their own national team, which means they'll have no motivation to create a local competition. So you've just constricted that area even further and just condensed it more to the north of England instead of expanding and trying to make it grow. And then you also run the risk of the competition in Wales that they've got there is then going to go through the same issue that the island of Scotland one has, and then you're going to squash that as well. And as much as we like to make jokes, we should be trying to make the game grow over there and make it bigger and stronger for the benefit of everybody. And if they go back to Great Britain, I fear that what will happen is it'll just kill the growth of rugby league in England even further and contract it even further to the northern suburbs that it's currently locked in. It needs to be going away from that and expanding beyond it, not getting more and more tighter into it.
I think that I don't think it'd change anything because it's all circling the drain anyway. So I'm honest. I'm not even joking though. I think that
But that's the thing though. We're not being dishonest or taking the piss or anything like that.
No, yeah.
I do try and be somewhat hopeful amongst the jokes for the Northern Hemisphere Rugby League.
Say I'm long past being hopeful with that. I just think rugby league's going backwards in England. So obviously nowhere in fucking Ireland and Scotland. If somebody can point to one moment in time where it was any good in Wales, I'd be fucking all ears. It would all went downhill after fucking 1907 when they played the Kiwis. And then, I can't wait until they expel England out of the International Rugby League. That's what that day will happen, right? Because they won't be playing rugby league. They'll be playing whatever this soft as shit version is that they'll come up with because some fucking lawyers wrote the rules. And when that day comes, I'm going to light a cigar. I'm going to smoke a cigar on the podcast when that happens.
Well, I mean, there's something to for you to keep tuning in for, people. Get ready for that. Freaky sucking on a poop stick.
Right. We're sitting here and smoking the cigar saying, remember when England played rugby league and now they don't?
Wow. Them days.
Because, you know my thoughts when it comes to internet. It comes to like English rugby league, don't you?
Yeah.
Fuck them. Yeah.
You love them.
Yeah.
What's this one here? It looked like a bad headline. Following the first board meeting of the newly formed United States Association of Rugby League, the organization is now seeking to appoint independent directors to join the board. How long before they kill themselves and start fighting with one another?
I give it 6 months.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I hope it doesn't happen.
But it will.
It will.
It will. It's because it's such a big country. Like, the people, there can be people running their rugby league portion over here and then another group of people running their stuff over here and stuff. And then all of a sudden one of them says, well, we're the governing body, and the other people say, fuck you, man. We've been doing our own thing over here. We don't need you a lot. That's why it is.
That's possibly true, yeah.
Yeah.
Need some good news to get us going.
Yeah, what would be something good that's happened in rugby league?
Newcastle in third division had their best performance of the year last week.
Oh, what was the scoreline?
Hunslet beat them 48-12.
Ooh, getting closer.
That's 40 points better than their previous best performance this year, where they lost 88-12 to Sheffield.
That's, yeah, see? It's all going in the right direction.
But they're improving their defense so much faster than any other team was. Next week at that rate, they'll beat Midlands by, 20-0.
And Midlands is a powerhouse.
Oh, yeah. And then they've got Workington. I mean, they'll end up with Workington in negative points.
Workington is one of the most beautiful places you will ever see.
Never went there.
Yeah, neither have I. I'm just making it all up.
Fair enough. I'll tell you what, now. We've got a few seconds. I'm going to have a look I want to have a look on Google for Workington pictures. Workington scenery, UK.
It's fucking in the north of England. Have you ever been anywhere?
Oh, come on. It's in the Lakes District. Of course it's going to be all right.
Please. The Lakes District. It's the most overrated place in the world.
No. No. I live there.
What do you mean you live there?
Melbourne is the most overrated place in the world.
Oh, okay. I was going to say. Yeah.
Comfortably.
Yeah, easy. It's not even close, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what place actually comes close to being as overrated as Melbourne.
I think New York would.
New York? Tamworth?
Nah, no one rates Tamworth.
It's still being overrated.
Yeah, people say Tamworth's shit, and it is highly overrated even there.
There's the castle. The castle looks like someone's hanging the finger at you.
Okay.
I've got to show you this picture. This is classic.
Yeah, send me a picture of it.
We need to actually be going back to putting pictures on the podcast episode stuff.
I like it. I like it when we do visual stuff on the podcast.
People love it too.
Yeah.
It just looks like
Look at that. The castle looks like it's giving the middle finger.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's brilliant. I love Workington now.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Middle finger to the world. Well, on that up. Who cares? Uplifting boat. There we go. That's something like that. I'm just word soup now. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Make sure to check us out on all the socials. And we'll catch us all next time.